Hello, everyone. Welcome to this month's live Toronto real estate market update. For those of you who are new to my updates, welcome. My name is John Basalis. I'm the president and broker of record at Relosophy Realty in Toronto. I started my own brokerage to put into action my belief that consumers with access to the right information and the right advice will make better real estate decisions. And that this is important because our real estate decisions have an outsized impact on our finances and our quality of life. So if you're considering buying, selling, or investing in the greater Toronto area, including the suburbs, you can click the link in our show notes to set up a meeting with me and one of my agents. And now on to today's market update. So let me pull up our slides and our agenda of what we're looking at again. As always, I'm going to kind of kick off with a brief overview of the market for houses and condos separately. I'm going to be looking at some historical trends, you know, what the recent numbers look like compared to the past 25 years. And chatting about with Gus and Davin when we bring them on, kind of what we're seeing on the ground. You know, the data is one part of sort of information and trends. But of course, the other part is, what are we seeing with clients? What's the sentiment like? How does that change? All of those types of things. We're going to chat a little bit about that. And of course, as always, David LaRock, mortgage broker, contributes to Move Smartly every week. Will be joining us to talk about the latest trends in the mortgage market, Bank of Canada's recent pause, and what that means for rates in the near future. As we're going through this, if you have questions, comments, post them in the chat. Ermi Desai from Move Smartly is joining us today. Thanks, Ermi. And she will be keeping an eye on your comments. So please post them if you have any specific ones. We'll do our best to answer them during the show. So moving things along, let's take a look at the market for low-rise houses. And I'm going to pull up some stats for the market specifically for detached houses, because that's sort of the segment that we have really long historical data for. And, you know, it goes back to 1997. And if we look at that, we basically see that sales in March last month were the lowest they've been since 1997. So a very, very soft market for low-rise detached home sales, the lowest on record. New listings were the second lowest they've been in about 20 plus years. The lowest in 20 years was actually last year. New listings for detached homes picked up a little bit, but we're again the second lowest in 20 plus years. You know, and of course the softness we're seeing in sales, a lot of this is just high interest rates, harder for people to get into the market, harder for people to upsize. And that's sort of contributing to the soft sales volume for detached homes. And of course, detached homes are the most expensive segment of the market. It's the most expensive house type. Now, when we look at active listings, so the number of homes available for sale, are also at a record low for the month of March. So this is why, again, I mean, when we hear about record low home sales, you know, we immediately think, oh my God, prices are going to plummet. I mean, that's typically, you know, when we have that inventory builds up, things slow down. But we're not seeing a buildup of inventory. We're seeing a record low level of inventory. And that's keeping the market kind of competitive still right now, even for detached homes. So sales are soft, but when inventory is low, you know, you can basically have still a relatively competitive market. Now, why are active listings and new listings so low? You know, there are a couple of different factors. I mean, there are, I think, cyclical factors that are driving this, certainly. So high interest rates is one of them. And we think about people who needs to upsize, you know, some of them or many of them will often sell their existing home. So, you know, someone who's buying a home will contribute to sort of the volume of sales, but then eventually that property that they currently live in will contribute to an increase in the number of new listings. As fewer people upsize, you know, we see less of that going on. The other part I talked about in our most recent real estate roundtable is that we still see some people who are upsizing and are not selling their homes. And we get clients like this all the time. It's usually people's first question if they can afford to do it. And that, of course, is partly contributing to the slowdown as well. So that's not a cyclical trend. That's a little bit more of a structural factor. So it's a combination of both. So, of course, over time, we'll probably see an increase in the new listings as sales pick up. But again, generally, new listings and active listings have been declining. Now, when we think about the balance of the market, as always, we're thinking about the months of inventory. So this is just the number of homes available for sale divided by the number of homes that have actually sold in the month. So when we look at the months of inventory in the GTA, it's been declining a little bit. I mean, it's just under 2 months of inventory, which is a pretty competitive market. So again, this is a signal how you know, it's not just sales. We can't just be looking at one side of the equation. This is why months of inventory is very important, because it looks at both the number of homes for sale and the number of sales, which ultimately determine how balanced the market is. Of course, if active listings were twice as high, the months of inventory would be much higher, which would mean the market would feel more sluggish, right? So even though sales are low, the fact that new active listings are low is what's contributing to months of inventory being in the 2 months range, which is, again, a relatively competitive market. If we look back even 4 or 5 months ago in the fall, you know, we had 4 months of inventory. Anyone who is actively looking for homes in that time would have noticed that homes weren't selling quickly. They're sitting on the market, even very desirable ones, far fewer multiple offers. And again, that is a market that is more sluggish. And that was not just because sales were low, but active listings were a lot higher in those periods. The market was just far more sluggish. So despite the fact that sales are so low for detached homes, we're seeing a relatively competitive market for detached homes. Now, when we look at average prices for all low-rise houses, you know, semis, detached row houses, they hit $1.37 million, which is basically flat compared to same month last year, March of last year. Now, it's worth saying between March and May of 2023, average prices went up about $100,000. We had a bit of a rally, so they went up from about 1.37 to 1.47. So, you know, if over the next couple of months prices stay flat, we're going to be looking at year-over-year declines in prices. But again, if they stay flat till the summer, we'll be sort of kind of flat year-over-year again, because that rally just kind of was a sort of a 2-3 month bump in prices, and then prices declined a little bit towards the summer of 2023. So that's a little bit about the detached market. I'm going to jump into the condo market and then see if we have any questions for the numbers before we bring Gus and Davin in. So when we look at the condo market, things are a little bit, more typical for the condo market. You know, condo sales were about 1,800, which is, you know, I'd say relatively average. There's certain months where the market was insane that was higher than that. Some months a little bit lower, but not anything out of the ordinary. New listings of condominiums. Let me see if I can get her. Here we go. New listings for condominiums, just around 4,300. Again, relatively normal. So pretty typical for the month of March. And then active listings at 5,800. They're well above what they have been over the previous 4 or 5 years. But interestingly enough, in line with what they were before 2015, we used to have far more active listings at that time. But the past few number of years, I mean, partly because we've had a bit of a rally in the condo market, things were pretty competitive. But so we're up over the previous years. But again, the key metric, again, is looking at sort of the months of inventory. And that as well has been declining for the condo market. We're currently about 3 months of inventory for condos. So, pretty balanced market, I'd say. Not as competitive as the market for houses, but not plummeting or anything like that. If we look back even a few months, condo market had about 5.5 months of inventory. It was actually far more quiet, far fewer showings in the fall. But the market has turned a little bit. It has become a little bit more competitive over the past 6 months or so. And part of this is just maybe affordability, people kind of moving in and shifting into the condo market a little bit more. Condo prices, about 730,000 average, pretty much flat over last year. And again, you know, if we don't see a slight uptick in prices, we'll probably be down year over year, because between March and May of 2023, prices went up for condos about 50,000. So we'll see if that happens this year. Now, the last thing I'll end with in terms of sort of the numbers is sort of looking at months of inventory on a weekly basis. I think it gives us an indication of which way the market's going, rather than, especially when we have like kind of fast moving markets sometimes, rather than just waiting for the end of the month. And I think last month I mentioned that it looked like the market was hitting sort of a cruise control. And by that, I mean no longer accelerating, not really decelerating, kind of just hitting sort of the same pace. And we can see that with the months of inventory. So when months of inventory, so it was plummeting. So in the fall, you know, like I said earlier, we had about 5.5 months of inventory for condos, about 4 months of inventory for houses. Those rapidly declined, you know, especially as we moved to the start of this year. But since the end of February or so, beginning of March, they've kind of plateaued. Condos have plateaued at around 3 months of inventory. Houses have plateaued at around 2 months. And again, this is slightly different from what we saw last year. If we look at sort of the data for last year, inventory levels kept plummeting. The market heated up. And this is partly why prices accelerated between now and May, because the market was getting tighter. The market was getting more competitive. So we're not seeing that. So, you know, this is typically a signal that, you know, we should see prices kind of stay relatively flat. You know, when we see this volume of inventory, when we see things kind of staying, you know, being a little bit steady, it usually means we're also seeing a little bit of stability in home prices. So that's a little bit on the data. Now, before I bring on Gus and Davin, Ermi, I thought I'd maybe see if we had any kind of questions regarding sort of the stats that we went over.
We have some great questions coming in. I think it might work best to pose these to you and David and maybe Gus and Davin.
Okay.
Because some of these questions involve all factors in the market.
All right.
Both the market activity and where mortgage rates might go.
Wild. Okay. Well, you know what, then why don't we start with Gus and Davin then? I think that might be the best. We'll just start with a little bit of an overview of what we're seeing on the ground. Then we'll bring David on to kind of answer some of these questions, since they're about everything. And then we'll kind of, I'll pepper David with some questions about some of the latest Bank of Canada announcements. So does that sound good?
It sounds good. Actually, you know what? If you want to come back to me after your short on the ground update, I have some market specific questions.
Oh, perfect. We'll do that.
Okay. Thanks.
Awesome. So Gus Papayanu, David McMahon joining us, both agents here at Relocity. Thank you guys for joining us.
Thank you.
Sure.
Cheers. So let's kick things off. What are some of the things that you guys are seeing? Gus, maybe we'll start with you, that you've been seeing over the past month or so since our last update.
Yeah. I think what you said about the market being kind of moving along at a standard pace, not speeding up and not slowing down, is pretty accurate overall, but there are differences between the type of product. I mean, as a example of sales that I've had in the last month or so, there's a condo in Prime Forest Hill I've been trying to sell for quite a bit of time with clients. And, you know, based on price expectations, based on market, and looking at what else is available in the neighborhood, there was always a lot of choice. A new development that finished on Eglinton brought new inventory. And, you know, every time we had consistent showings for this 3-bedroom, beautiful apartment. But the feedback was always, well, we've seen 4 or 5 or 6 and we're going to take our time to kind of wrap our heads around which one we want to offer on. People had choice. Versus the other side of the spectrum, which is what you mentioned about detached homes, you know, sold one in Vaughan and one in Etobicoke in March, and they both went, one went in a day and the other one went in 5 days, and they both got multiple offers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, specifically, like even the one in Etobicoke, there was nothing really near us that was listed. And we're talking like, you know, your classic 50 foot by, you know, 150 bungalow that needed work, but the buyer jumped on it right away because these are really hard to come by and they're just not there. So it's just the difference in market between the two spectrums. And then in terms of rentals, it's been pretty slow. I had a couple at Young and Egg, for example, and there was like, I was looking at the history. There was at the time when we were listed in early March, there was or mid-March, there was about 20 other two-bedroom condos available for lease, all within that $3,000 range at Young and Egg. And I just checked now, a month later, and now, you know, it was 20 then and 18 now. So really nothing's changed. We did get lucky and find a great tenant and lease it, which was awesome. But again, same thing. People were looking at multiple units and trying to decide which one to offer on. So I do think that, and maybe Davin can touch on this too, or give me some insight. I from the areas I've been working, I have noticed a slight blip in rental, in tenants being interested in properties, but nothing of the sorts where it's going to eat up a lot of the inventory. There's a lot of leases out there available.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean,
go ahead, there Davin. Is a little tiny bit of demand, blip, and I think it's just really going to be seasonal. Right, a lot of leases don't really take place in the later part of the year, earliest part of the year. So once April comes around, you know, maybe we're following you know, the college calendar, things kind of start to turn over, and I think that's probably part of it. Oddly enough, I have a lease listing in Hamilton, of all places, and I think we're one of, geez, maybe 45 one bedroom units all around like 500 square feet. Yeah, they're not getting snapped up at any great rate, so it's gonna be you know, a race to the bottom with some price discovery, but yeah, very similar to what Gus is seeing in Toronto, that there's a lot of leases out there. As far as sales, yeah, Gus is right. The freehold market is the one that's you know, kind of clicking along, not at a, like you said, not like an accelerated pace, but we're just, it's not really in a position that's it's hurting at all. I'm in the Oakville area recently. And, you know, you can get yourself a pretty nice, like, two-bed condo townhouse for something that's reasonable, like in the low sevens. I know that might sound tone deaf, but, you know, compared to, you know, the recent prices, it's actually quite good. Two beds, two full baths in a desirable part of Oakville. So there are some good options out there, and, the you know, things are kind of clicking along a little more slowly in the condo space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting to hear. Definitely the rentals are a challenge. You know, I think we talked about this before, a big supply shock. You know, and one thing people have been asking me is how Canada's shift to non-permanent residents, specifically sort of this idea that they're going to reduce it in the future. So number of non-permanent residents will actually be negative, how that's going to impact the condo market. Someone asked me that recently. And, you know, specifically about international students, and most international students, you know, aren't renting $22,000 per month condos. Like most are not, right? Most, no. You know, so it's the international student factor is likely going to impact sort of these rooming houses in the suburbs, you know, because that's where most of them rent. But there are some, you know, a lot of students who are relocating, like Canadian students who are, you know, from Toronto or from wherever, kind of relocating to Hamilton to study, you know, may rent something with a roommate and share it. The non-permanent residence also is not just students, it's just other temporary workers. So that will likely potentially have some spin-off effects on the condo market, because not all non-permanent residents are students. Many of them are just here employed on a temporary basis. So we'll see how that all plays out. In an environment where obviously we're starting to see a bit of a surge in rental listings.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Any other interesting stories you guys have seen? I mean, I've been seeing the same thing. Demands for low rise has been selling. It's been a bit shoot and miss. Some people, and we talked about this before, some sellers are a bit stubborn on their prices, I find, you know, some offer nights failing because the seller's expectations exceed what the market's giving them. And I wonder if this is going to shift in sentiment. I think we talked about this in our sales meetings. Like some clients just being so overly optimistic that if they wait, and this is our clients too, for the record, not just everyone else's clients. Yeah. Like sometimes we have clients who are just like, nope, I know you told me it's worth X dollars. I want X dollars plus 50 grand or plus 100 or whatever the expectation is. And I think there is for a lot of sellers, this expectation that rates are going to plummet and the demand is going to surge. And if they just wait till May, they're going to get 50 grand or more. And we're going to have David on a little bit, but it sounds like the Bank of Canada is dumping some cold water on that idea that we're going to see this massive, you know, shift in policy rates kind of plummeting. So I wonder how that's going to shift or impact seller sentiments. I haven't seen it yet because I think there's a lot of sellers who are still a bit optimistic.
There is some chatter. Like I have a couple of clients who are thinking of selling and that's exactly what they're thinking. They're like, not yet, not yet, not yet. They're trying to kind of time the market and see when the first couple rate cuts are going to happen because they think they're going to get more. And they may very well get more. We don't know. We'll see. And then there's the opposite. I have quite a few buyers I'm working with that are nervous. They're really nervous. There's no inventory, especially in the freehold. There's not much to buy. These people are all, I can think of five of them, and they're all looking in prime neighborhoods. We're talking High Park, Roncesville, Yonge and Eglinton, Leslieville. So these are Corso Italia, which is used to be known to be affordable, but even there it's very competitive. There's just no inventory. And so they're nervous that if they don't find something very shortly, once the rate cuts come, that it's, you know, freeholds are going to accelerate further. Whether that happens or not, we'll see. But it's really interesting, the two dynamics between the two of sellers holding on price and buyers really anxious and worrying about that. So
yeah, and Anastasia was mentioning that. So Anastasia is another agent that works at our office. So I think in our last or the second last one of our sales meetings, she kind of talked about, she has a couple clients looking in Durham. And Durham, she's saying, is just unbelievably competitive. And, you know, Durham, not surprisingly, is competitive because it is the most affordable region in the GTA. Like if you look at average detached home prices, they're lowest in Durham compared to the other four regions in the Toronto area. And she said it's very competitive and it's tough with buyers because, you know, she'll tell them like, this is what it's worth. You know, buyers are being conservative. They don't want to go overly aggressive. You know, and then someone pays like 10 grand over that just to kind of get over the hump. So, you know, clients end up losing it. They end up competing with 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people. So it's a tough market. So some people in some markets, you know, are pushing the prices up gradually in markets like Durham potentially, but I don't want to make it sound like that's the normal trend. Again, it depends on the market. That market happens to be the most affordable, which is probably why it's, again, the most competitive right now. Ermi, maybe we'll turn it to you and maybe go through some of the market questions we got.
For sure. All right, John, let's start with you. Zooming into low rise home segment a bit more. Mm-hmm. Igor asks a great question. Just pulling it up here. Is there a historical percentage premium between semi and detached homes within the GTA?
Yeah, no, there's definitely a premium. I mean, it's hard to say what that is. You know, even when we look at comparable sales in the same neighborhood, right? I mean, I'm in Leslieville now. Like, we're not going to use detached home sales as a comparable for a semi and say, well, let's deduct 100 grand or 150. Because, I mean, you can't do that because it's not just it's detached. It's usually also in a bigger lot. It's usually also a bigger home. So it's very hard to just say what that ratio is. Yeah, but definitely there's a premium for being detached.
All right. Thank you, John. And now we have a question for all of you. I'm wondering what each of you thinks. From a condo owner, I have a question. I have a buyer for my condo downtown with reasonable price, what I bought it for 2 years ago. Should I wait for a rate cut or sell? I need to make this decision, but it's very hard. It's a tenanted unit and the tenant is interested, I presume, in buying.
So, I mean, it's funny. This is exactly what we talked about. So this question strikes at the heart of, you know, what we just said. I mean, do you wait or do you just sell? I mean, I don't know. You guys?
Well, what is your product like and how does it kind of stack up against other items in the neighborhood or more so in the building itself? If you're in a 1+1 condo and there's 3 or 4 sitting on the market as well, well, I'd, you know, maybe take a back seat, see how those do, monitor the market and then make your decision from there. If they're having a hard time selling, you know, and demand's not there, that can only mean that the price is probably going to stay flat or down. And that would be, it's going to be very specific to what the actual situation is.
Yeah, that's a good answer. I had 2 clients recently. We listed, they're both of them condo owners, listed the condos for sale, also listed them for lease. And we waited to see what would come first and what would happen. Both got offers, but didn't pan out because they were low.
Offers for what? Offers for sale or offers for lease?
Oh, sorry. Excuse me. Thank you, John. Offers. They both got offers for sale. They both got offers for lease too. In the end, we found good tenants for both and we leased. And I think it comes down to every individual. If you're underwater every month and it's stressful, you know, yes, things will get better, but I don't see things, going to the point where, the value of a condo specifically will accelerate by 10% year over year in the next 12 months. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. We were used to that over the last decade. And I think the likelihood of that happening is lower. So if that's the case, then you're probably going to be worth similar amount of money in the next year, even if you're worth 20 grand more. Well, you got to carry it, right? If you're got to put money into it. So you still got to put that money into it. So really, whether you sell now or a year from now for 20 grand more, isn't that the same thing? You know, so if you're happy with the price, maybe it's time to think about cashing out and then you wait and see what happens, right?
Yeah, I think we answered this almost the same question 2 weeks ago, where you can either take like a known amount now or an unknown amount later, which could be up or down. And like, as Gus said, the amount that it would be up just made it, it's going to be a wash.
Yeah, and just
or,
to touch
or
on
that. Or it won't, like we don't know, but it's a risk, right? Trying to mitigate.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I mean, I agree with you. And I think when we, I mean, you know, I guess the question, his question, but her, I don't know who it is, their question was, should I sell now or wait for a rate cut, right? So, you know, this idea that waiting till June will get a better price, I mean, I don't want to say one way. My instinct is no. Like, it doesn't look like we're going to see a dramatic change. And again, if we look back at the data, look back at the charts, when we see months of inventory kind of flatlining, which, yes, has been like the past, we don't know what's going to go in the future, but this usually suggests a plateauing of prices rather than acceleration. If things were plummeting, it would tell you the market's heating up and there'd be some signal. Now, I don't think a quarter point rate cut is going to shift the market very much, you know, and it seems like we're not going to get as many cuts as people are hoping for. So I wouldn't base your decision on rate cuts personally. I would just base it on all these other factors, you know, cash flow. Do you want to sell now? Do you want to hold on? All of those types of things. So hopefully that answers it, Ermin.
That was helpful. And we got a response that it was. Thanks for the insight. Thank you for the question. Let's go to the western edges of the GTA with some buying questions. Mm-hmm. The first one from Mark. A question about cities in the Western GTA. Recently, Burlington market has been tighter than Oakville and Mississauga. I wonder why this is the case. Will this change in the short term? And Mark adds, we're looking at Burlington right now. Should we shift our focus to Oakville and Mississauga? So what do you do when you see those differences in those micro areas?
We're going to let our Burlington and Oakville specialist over here dive into, he knows those markets a little bit better.
Yeah, so that person read the article that came out for sure. I think it was Toronto Star or something like that. I mean, it's personal preference. What's the difference really between Burlington and Oakville? Not a whole lot really, except for, you know, access to the city itself. So if they're reasonable substitutes for each other, and you find that one seems to be a little more of a loose market where you can actually get what you want for the same price that you're looking for in Burlington, I mean, why wouldn't you do that? I wouldn't say that one is going to perform better than the other over any sort of like medium time frame. Just ensure you're, you know, looking for the right things, the school district and the home itself, because neighborhoods are going to change over and over again. So I mean, there's certain parts of Oakville that are going to be much tighter than others. There's certain parts of Burlington that are going to be tighter than others. And just right now, it happens to be Burlington versus Oakville. Come September, might just flip. There's nothing really fundamental in the two towns that's actually causing this. It just happens to be the case right now.
That's 100%. Davin's 100%. We see this all the time, even in Toronto. A few months, East End's hotter than the West End, and the West End's hotter than the East End. And again, it's these micro imbalances. The other thing I would add, and I agree with Davin, that the decision should be more on where you want to live personally, right? And what has the type of house you want. And if it's a little bit more competitive, then you just wait it out, or you can be more strategic in how you approach the market, right? And how, what I mean by strategic is, you know, looking at homes maybe that some people aren't looking at, like, you know, the prettiest homes everywhere are going to get the most offers, right? And I'm not saying look at the dumps, but there's something in between the dump and the prettiest home that is good value, that is not staged, that is a little bit older, that needs a little bit of money, you know, but it doesn't present well. And that is sometimes where you get an edge if you're focusing on those things. Sometimes if you're just going out and looking at homes faster than everybody and putting in a preemptive or bully offer, everyone, you know, to try to beat people out. Everyone hears or thinks making a bully offer is irrational, you're overpaying, but it's not always the case. Again, it's strategic. If you're focusing on a property where the listing agent is not as experienced, isn't as savvy, doesn't know the market, you could be making a bully offer that is market value or a little bit less and still get it because they don't really know the market that well, right? You can't do that with a very experienced agent. Like, no experienced agent's going to take a preemptive offer that is a price that they know they're going to get anyways. But again, sometimes there are ways we can do this. And we've done that with our clients. It's like you put a bully on an agent that does two deals a year. Yeah, you can maybe pull a fast one on them and get a little bit lucky, right? So there are other ways to navigate the market, even when it's competitive, I guess is what I'm saying.
All right. Thanks to all of you. John, I think you actually touched a bit on Mr. What to Do Today's question.
Okay.
Last one for this segment. I'm looking to buy a 2,700 square foot type detached home in Mississauga. Any advice as I enter the buying phase?
Call Rolofsky.
John, you just mentioned. Sorry, Gus.
That was Davin.
Call Rolofsky.
Call Rolofsky. Yeah, I mean, obviously we can do that. But yeah, listen, I think the advice is you need to be, you know, educated. You need to be informed. You need to be strategic. I mean, like, we, you know, before we even start looking, we kind of tour a few areas with our clients. We call it like a market education. So it's highly educational to just understand the market, to figure out where you're focusing on. And then just being thoughtful about the strategy and approach you're taking. Of course, if you want a turnkey home that looks amazing, it's going to be a little bit more competitive. You know, and some clients don't want to go with what I suggested earlier, with just a slightly fixer upper type home. So it depends on every client's specific needs. But again, I think having a bit of a strategy and a plan of how you're going to approach the market, and some areas are not going to be as competitive as others, right? So in some cases you have homes that are overpriced and you're offering below asking and you're trying to convince the seller why they're unrealistic. So I think it's very specific to the neighborhood and the type of home.
I think it's important also, for buyers, most people don't think about this, interview a few agents. You know, it's usually people who are only selling homes that might talk to 3, 4, 5 agents to see who's going to be the best fit. It's not one size fits all for agents that are going to help you buy as well. So make sure you do your own homework, due diligence, and probably take a look at a few folks who can help you the best.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think a lot of agents don't do that when they're buying homes. Of course, sellers will almost always interview 2 or 3 agents. A lot of buyers don't, and they should, because you can size up pretty quickly who kind of knows what they're doing and not personally. I mean, and we do it in the business every day. I mean, honestly, like half of our stress in our sales meetings is like talking about dealing with agents who don't understand the market, who are like, can't negotiate, like just are like hurting their clients, whether they're representing sellers or buyers, right? Depending on the side that we're on. So
the amount of deals you can make successful for your client just by submitting an error-free offer.
100%.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Like so simple. Like the rapport is there. They know you're not going to be difficult to deal with. Just something that simple can make a difference.
It does make a difference. I mean, I noticed it even on the listing side when we represent sellers, you know, you get 10 offers and seven of them or six of them are littered with errors. Like you're just not as confident with the agent. And sometimes people ask us, well, why does a seller's agent, when the negotiations are close, like when it's between two offers, right? Like why does one person bias a certain agent or buyer over another? And sometimes it's purely because the agent just seems more confident, more aware, because it's not just that they have an error-free offer. You get the sense that if they're coming in firm, the buyer agent has done their due diligence on their financing. They've done their due diligence on the inspection. And we've been burned sometimes when our clients don't listen to us. They take that offer that's slightly higher. And I've been in this exact scenario. Firm offer, the client wants an extra $5,000. So they go with the agent, the terrible offer, littered with mistakes. Next day calls and says, oh, you know what? My buyer changed his mind. Thanks. Have a good day. Like you can't do that, obviously, you know, but you don't have the deposit yet. Right. So again, all of this stuff, I feel matters and does influence the seller's decision. So I would say interview. Definitely agree with Davin.
All right. Well, Mr. What to Do Today is not going to let you off that easy, John. Final question for this segment. Message retracted. I'm going to ask it, Mr. What to Do Today.
Do you remember it?
Do I even need an agent? Isn't an agent a buying agent align against my own interests? Because the interest is for them to have me buy for a higher price, because that will earn them a higher commission.
So this is a good question. I mean, the idea that the agent's interests are aligned to make you spend more is misguided. I mean, number one, you got to just do the math. Like, how much more does an agent make if you spend an extra $10,000 on a property? Right?
$250.
Right? That's it. Like, so it's misguided to think that, like, the agent's job is to represent them, because the agent's job is to make sure they're happy, make sure they got value, make sure they got what they wanted, to refer them their friends in the future. That's your agent's bias, quite frankly. And listen, you can size up who you feel is representing you and not. So listen, do you need an agent? I mean, in theory, no. You can go and negotiate it yourself. Like, honestly, my experience is it's a tough market to navigate. It's a tough market sometimes to figure out comparable sales, what a property's worth. You know, I think I said this story a while ago of how I had a client who's like a data scientist and like would challenge me on my valuations a lot of times, right? You know, because he would, and this is a natural tendency. As a buyer, you're picking comparables that tell the story that you want, which is the home is worth a lower price, right? And again, we had this back and forth. I think this is why those comparables don't make sense, you know. And then once or two or three times in, he's like, okay, I get it. We're fine, you know, and goes with the valuation. So listen, I think it's a tough market. If you're very savvy, knock yourself out. But at the end of the day, the listing agent's double ending it anyway. So you're just like, you know, one person's getting paid. You're either your buyer agent's getting paid to help you, or the listing agent's getting double the commission, one way or the other. So it's really personal preference.
All right. Thank you, John. Hopefully, Mr. What to Do Today enjoyed that answer. He responded, or she, I am a data scientist. So
that's so funny.
Well, let's see. Thank you for all the questions. I think we'll hold it here. You can find contact information for us in the show notes. And if you want to get in touch with John and his team, Gus Davin there directly, you can see that link in our show notes as well at Relosophy and also at our website, relosophy.com. So I think maybe beautiful. It's time for mortgage news.
Beautiful, guys. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. That was fun.
Thank you.
We'll bring on Mr. David LaRock. David.
Hello.
Thank you again for joining. For those of you who are showing up a little bit late, this is David LaRock, integrated mortgage planners, regular writer at Move Smartly, and super knowledgeable of all things real estate related to the mortgage markets and the economy. So, David, we're going to kick things off with your thoughts on the Bank of Canada's latest pause on interest rates. What did that signal? I mean, of course, they released their monetary policy report. So what are the things that kind of stood out to you with this recent announcement?
Okay, well, full confession, John, I haven't had time yet to go through the monetary policy report. It's 35 pages of really dense material, and I will do that before I write about it in my post next Monday. But I have looked at their statement. I've read some of the hot takes, and I have taken a quick look at the monetary policy report. Long story short, the narrative in the market for some time has been rate cuts are imminent. At the start of the year, people thought they were going to happen in March. Then they thought they were going to happen in April. Up until now, it was June. Now, after what the Bank of Canada said yesterday, the market is now pushing the bet on the first rate cut out till July. If we pan back and look more broadly at the backdrop, there is a very consistent theme, which is that things are taking longer than the market expects. The narrative is rate cuts are coming soon and we're going to get a lot of them. And at every turn, the expectations get pushed farther out. And whereas at the start of the year, the expectations was that we'd get 6 quarter point cuts by the Bank of Canada, now the market is pricing in 2. Wow. And that's down from 3. So, I mean, whatever rate cuts
we want this. Sorry, pause. 2 for this year, 2024?
That's right. Yeah. Oh, as of now, the odds say, there's a chance we'll get 3, but the odds say there's a better than 50% chance we'll get 2. After that, the odds tail away. So, long story short, anybody trying to time the market, I mean, guys, the funny thing is if your neighbor sat down with you for a cup of coffee and said, I'm not going to buy this stock because I think I can time a better time to buy it, you'd look at them like they were nuts. But when it comes to selling your house, we all think we're a genius. Everybody's saying, wait a second, there's no listings right now, so I'm going to wait till rates drop when me and everybody else is going to list their house. So you want to sell in a market where there's tons of inventory competing with what you're trying to sell versus a time where people are wandering through the desert looking for any house they can find for sale because there's no listings. I'm sorry. I understand why people think that. I don't mean to insult people's logic. They may end up being proven right, but there is a groupthink happening here, and that's really the theme that I think is important for people to understand. The market thinks one thing. The Bank of Canada and the Fed have been saying something else for quite a while, which is that rate cuts aren't coming as fast as you think, and inflation is going to take longer to come down than people expect, and people need to cool their jets. And in the past, the bond market has been right more often than the central banks have been right. But the central banks have their hands on the tillers. They're the ones who decide when they're going to cut. And they've continually forced the market to reset its expectations. And that happened again yesterday. The other thing that happened again yesterday, John, a bigger deal, was the U.S. CPI data came in a little bit higher than expected. We're talking a small difference. Mm-hmm. And bond yields have shot higher. Like to a crazy level. They've moved to the kind of level you would see if we were expecting a big jobs report and we got a terrible jobs report. Mm-hmm. That's the reaction we've seen in the market. We've had about a 20 basis point move in the Government of Canada 5-year bond yield, and the 3-year Government of Canada 3-year bond yield is not far behind. There's been a massive spike in bond yields, and it's US Treasuries that are pulling Government of Canada's higher, as they often do. And that's the story today. The big move in rates right now is because U.S. Treasuries are shooting higher. And the reason the market is reacting so strongly to a fairly minor deviation in the CPI data is because everybody is priced for perfection. Everybody is assuming the rate cuts are almost here and we're going to get a lot of them. And anything that contradicts that view is shaking the market, because it's all like everybody's over on one side of the boat. And the boat is leaning heavily in that direction. And as soon as people shift to the other side, all of a sudden we get all this volatility. And that's where we're at right now.
Wow, that's unbelievable. I was going to ask you about the US CPI. Now, is that translating into higher bond yields in Canada as well as the US?
Yes.
Okay.
And because our markets are so interlinked, and we're the mouse and they're the elephant, when US Treasuries move higher, there is an almost perfect correlation between US and Canadian bond yields. Now, very recently, there's been some deviation because it's clear that our economies are not on similar trajectories as they typically are over the longer term. But the correlation is incredibly strong. They are the sun in terms of the gravitational pull in the bond market. And all of the upward move in Government of Canada bond yields, again, 20 basis points in 2 days, that's a big move. It's all attributed to following U.S. Treasuries, as is often the case, and as is typically the case.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So this is kind of likely going to lead, it seems like, to stickier fixed interest rates over the next 6+ months. I mean, we're still in the fives. You know, I think a lot of people were hoping we'd be in the fours. But I mean, do you see that happening over the next 6 months? Like fixed rates dropping below 5%, like for 3-year terms?
So it's hard to say, John, and I'm probably going to frustrate some people because I'm going to sound like a typical economist. Everybody wants a one-handed economist because economists always say on the one hand, but on the other hand. So everybody says, just give me a one-handed economist. So bottom line, I have written in my posts for some time now that Canadians should be aware that while variable rates move when the Bank of Canada moves its policy rate, and the Bank of Canada does that in response to what's happening in the Canadian economy, our fixed mortgage rates are going to piggyback on what happens with U.S. bond yields. And because the U.S. economy is doing much better, and it's much hotter right now, I shouldn't say much better. Their government is spending a lot of money, and their saving rate is lower. People are burning through their savings faster. There are some concerns about the U.S. economy. But the reality is our fixed mortgage rates are going to follow what's happening in the U.S. much more closely. So variable rates are a bet on Canada, fixed rates are a bet on the U.S. So the reality is right now, it doesn't look like rates are coming down anytime soon. In fact, it looks like the momentum for fixed rates is higher because of all of the bullish news happening in the U.S. But if you're the Bank of Canada, not only is the U.S. economy much stronger than expected, you've got geopolitical risks, which are significantly, the geopolitical risks are adding a lot of volatility to the price of oil. And the price of oil is the single most important component in all of the subcomponents that go into the inflation data. If the price of oil goes to 120 bucks, you can have big drops in all kinds of other prices. Because the price of oil feeds into everything. So geopolitical risks are a big unknown. And right now that's pointing prices higher because oil prices have been rising. The other thing, if you're the Bank of Canada, they've been getting louder and louder about this, pointing out that our governments are not aligning with their attempts to reduce demand. Our provincial governments have just released their budgets, and there's a lot of new spending in those budgets. Our federal government is about to release their budget. And just today, John, while you were talking with Devin and Gus, it was just announced that the federal government will now allow 30-year amortizations for first-time buyers who are buying new homes. And in addition, they can double their RSP withdrawals.
Yeah, I saw that.
So we are, the federal government, the Bank of Canada, imagine they're sitting in front of a fire and the Bank of Canada is going, we need to tamp this down. We need to pour more water on it. We need to stop adding fuel to the fire. And the federal government comes along and says, well, we're not doing well on the housing file. We've been lousy at this for quite a while. So here's a cup of gasoline. We're just going to go ahead and pour that over top of your water, Bank of Canada. And if you're the BOC, I mean, You have to respond to that. Even if you think the economy would otherwise need lower rates, if the federal government is going to add demand and pour gasoline on the fire, then the BLC is going to take longer to cut their rates. And they said, by the way, in the press conference yesterday, somebody wrote about this. I haven't listened to the press conference yet, but apparently they said quite outwardly that there's a lot of pent-up demand in the real estate market, and they are worried that there will be a surge in real estate demand when they start cutting rates. And because when people buy houses, it triggers all kinds of other demand in housing related areas. Mm-hmm. They've got that sort of demand boost coming as soon as they start cutting. And if in the midst of all of that, we have upward pressure from the U.S., we have rising oil prices, we have provincial and federal governments increasing spending, there's a lot of arrows pointing up right now. And I think anybody hoping for a bunch of rate cuts or sharply lower rates in the future, anybody making a different decision about when the right time to sell their houses or to buy is based on that assumption. Yeah. There's an old rule, John. There's this guy, Bob Farrell. He's a famous investor. He's got these 8 rules of investing, which are really awesome. People should look it up if they want to check him out. Bob Farrell. Maybe we can put it in the show notes. Or maybe it's his 10 rules of investing. But one of the rules is whenever everybody thinks something's going to happen, something else happens. And right now, everybody's over on the right side of the boat thinking that rates are going to drop quickly and the rate cuts are just around the corner. And I've been at this a long time. And typically, when everybody thinks that one thing's going to happen, something else happens. And this seems to be the case here.
Interesting you bring up the federal government's loosening of mortgage underwriting. And the Bank of Canada's, I mean, I scanned it quickly, their monetary policy report. And what was interesting was they looked at the main upside risks to inflation. So what are the risks that might kind of drive inflation higher? And the first one on the list was house prices could rise sharply. And I'm going to quote them. They actually said, but house prices could rise faster than forecast if easing financial conditions or population growth leads to stronger than expected demand for housing while supply remains constrained. And this is sort of basically a direct way of saying if the government eases lending on mortgages more than we expect, this could drive home prices higher. So I thought that was interesting. Ermi, we only have a few more minutes. Why don't we go to take over the questions for David before we wrap up at 1 o'clock?
Okay, I'm going to try to summarize a brief question that I know, John, we're going to be looking at in more detail in Move Smartly in the future. But generally, I think the question is to Dave and you both, why doesn't the government try to use, instead of some of the federal measures, for example, we're seeing in the upcoming budget to try and help buyers with this and that fund or the rest, why don't they look at mortgage rules themselves a bit more, engineering them a bit better to reduce investor activity, if that's what we want, and help home buyers? So Ankush, for example, asks, what is stopping OFSI with coming up with 3 conditions, you know, a minimum 35 to 45% down payment for an investment property, so making it harder for investments? And on the other side, why not offer a discount of 1 to 2% on interest rate payments to first-time home buyers? So, and then another idea is to ban HELOC money from investing into properties. Now, I know there's a lot there, but in general, is there something we're missing about why engineering into the mortgage space like this is not looked at as much?
I think just quickly, David, I'll let you answer as well. Well, a few quick answers because we don't have too much time. But I mean, personally, I don't think there's the political will. I think there's no interest. I think our housing market has been driven by investment. I think most housing experts are perfectly fine with investors buying up the housing stock. They don't see this an issue. So I think they're missing that it's not just an issue of economics. I mean, there's a lot of other side effects that happen when you have investors being the fastest growing segment of the market. But I don't think there's the political will or interest to do that personally. But David, what do you think quickly?
Well, the banking regulator is charged with maintaining the financial stability. And when they make tweaks to the market, they're very cautious because the market is a very delicate, intricate ecosystem. And the solutions that the writer is proposing would be the equivalent of taking a sledgehammer and starting to slam away at that very delicate market. And if you're charged with financial stability, you have to be aware of the law of unintended consequences. And I think those proposals might not play out the way people hoped they would. And I think the banking regulator, because their primary objective is preserving financial stability, looks to trim at the edges, not to overdo it. And in fairness, there have been times in the past where people have implored them to do radical things, which they have not done. And history has shown that to have been the right decision. So I think we got to be careful about draconian solutions.
And one final question for both of you. You're talking today about inflation running higher than anticipated, especially in the U.S. But overall, Dave, you've been speaking to the fact that the U.S. economy is stronger than Canada's. And I'm wondering, in spite of these concerns, John and you both mentioned that there could be a run on housing if rates shift. Overall, Julia asks, do you think in general in Canada, people are concerned about a more severe recession or downturn still being a possibility, given that unemployment is rising, job vacancies have been dropping, and that's relative to what we were seeing several months ago?
The Bank of Canada has acknowledged in their policy statement that they see weakening in the employment market. I think most Canadians, the polls I read, think that most Canadians do expect that we'll get a recession and that it'll be a sharp one. So in answer to her question, I think that is very much still a possibility. And I think lots of Canadians expect that will happen. It's just taking longer than we believed, right? There's a lag effect when rates go up. Only half of Canadians have had to renew at higher rates yet. So all the slowdown you see in the market is where we've only seen half of the impact of higher rates. I mean, obviously, it's not just the housing market that's affected, but there's more to come. There's more slowdown built into the pipeline already coming our way. And I think we will get more slowdown. I think most Canadians expect that to be the case. And I think she's right to be concerned about that.
I'll give the thumbs up to Dave. I agree. This is a lag. I think this is why it's so impossible to time the market. We might not see these effects happen till the end of this year, beginning of next year. You know what I mean? So again, the market's very slow to respond. So it's tough to say when all of that plays out.
All right. Well, I'm going to do my part to return us to our jobs and draw the help Canadian productivity. I think we're at the end of the session now. So thank you all for joining. There's some questions we couldn't get to. All the links for John and Dave's contacts, including their latest reports and blog posts, are in the show notes for today. As always, thank you for watching or listening to us. And please join us here same time or around the same time next month.
Sounds great.